If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
And welcome to First Things First. It is a beautiful Monday morning here in New York City. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. Big show on the program today. Big news with Rob Gronkowski walking away. You got LeBron already moving on to next season. But what a weekend in the NCAA tournament to discuss. Let's start with one of the best games this weekend. Duke, the Blue Devils, barely moving on after a tight one with number 9 seed UCF. Less than 20 seconds to go. Duke down 3. Zion gets the layup to fall and the foul. That to tie it. Misses it. But how about R.J. Barrett there for the putback? Duke now up 1. Time winding down. UCF gets one last chance for the win. Can't get that or that. To fall, almost did, so close, couldn't be closer. 13 lead changes in this game, including 3 in the final minute of play. Boy, Duke barely escapes. They win 77-76. They are on to the Sweet 16. Here is Zion Williamson talking about the final possession.
Go out there and play like defense and play like you gotta play like there's no tomorrow. And, you know, Trey played great defense and got him to shoot like a off-balance shot. And, you know, Dawkins came flying in. I mean, when he tipped it, you talk about microseconds. And when that ball rolled around the rim, it looked like it was going in. But, you know, as Coach K talks about a lot with the basketball gods, they had our back tonight.
He did say that. Coach K said luck was on our side. I mean, I thought Duke was going to lose this game. They got very, very lucky at the end. See, what was your reaction to Duke's win?
Yeah, but you need that. In the NCAA tournament, you look at past champions, typically there is a game where they are tested, or typically a game that they shouldn't necessarily win or they don't play their best. That has been one of the consistent things in watching the NCAA, and that's what Duke will be trying to. They will have the ability, because it's a lot easier to correct your mistakes from a win compared to, man, the suddenness of it, man. And these tournaments are so emotional. So for the kids of Duke, they know they were very, very fortunate to be able to get through this game against a very good UCF team coached by Johnny Dawkins. Man, he had his team ready. Now, he is a disciple of Coach K, and you can see he ran some half-court sets that gave Duke problems. He also knew about the personnel of Duke, and I believe was able to exploit the lack of height and the lack of perimeter shooting that Duke has struggled with throughout the season. So great job by Johnny Dawkins and the UCF and what they did yesterday, coming up just a little bit short. Ball halfway in, halfway out, rolls off the rim with the chance for UCF to come up with the biggest upset in the tournament.
And the kid who was tipping it in, Aubrey Dawkins, obviously Johnny's son, a kid who grew up in the area when Johnny was an assistant at Duke. Johnny, I believe, was Coach K's first All-American. So there's a lot of history there. And Aubrey played the best game of his life, and he came up just this short. So many things had to fall in the final 2 minutes exactly Duke's way for them to win. When UCF had the ball up 4 and they had the alley-oop to Aubrey Dawkins, and it just goes through his hands.
A shot he probably makes nine out of ten times.
That wasn't, I understand that during the post-game discussion, Barkley and some others took issue with it. There's too much time to run off clock there. There's 2 minutes left. You have a layup. And he wasn't trying to showboat or anything. That was the most high percentage play. He just didn't come down with it. But go a minute later. Zion misses a 3 on what could have been the last possession. They get the offensive rebound. That then leads to the and one. On that, if Taco Fall, who played, I thought, really well, fouls him, as you said before the show, see, hard enough, yeah. Then he's, first of all,
you can't allow Zion to get to the bucket at that point in the game and get the ball above his head. If you're going to foul him, you have to be able to be more tactical and hold his arms down.
Particularly because you're up 3. Because, I mean, it's a killer in that spot. But even there, he misses the free throw. Zion was, I thought, brilliant in this game. But he misses the free throw. But Taco had fouled out there.
There was no one in the lane.
R.J. Barrett goes down and gets the offensive rebound. All 3 of those things have to go Duke's way. And then UCF has one good shot attempt and one perfect tip attempt. They did a great job with the camera work showing that Aubrey, before the ball was even released, was tracking for the tip in, looping around, pushed a teammate out of the way, and got exactly where he wanted to go. Duke is the better team than UCF, but they didn't play a better game than UCF yesterday. They just got fortunate. But to C's point, Villanova last year was the outlier. The team that rolls through everyone en route to a championship. Almost every champion other than them has a game where, oh, it could have gone the other way. We'll see if Duke continues that trend by winning this tournament.
Was this just an oops game for Duke? Or, see, as you touched on, did UCF sort of lay out the blueprint on how to beat the Duke Blue Devils?
Right. Coming to the tournament, you don't think Duke's going to struggle in the first round. But I think that with them being the favorite in the tournament, teams that are in their bracket or know about them and watching college basketball, you know there's several things Duke has struggled with this year, even though they've had an amazing season. Their lack of perimeter shooting, one of the worst in college basketball. There's like 350 teams in college basketball. They're in the bottom percentile as far as, I mean, they're in the 330, Nick?
340th out of 353 the teams in college basketball.
I mean, you could be blindfolded and do better than what they're doing. So they don't have great perimeter shooting. They don't have a lot of depth.
No.
They don't have much height. So if anyone gets into foul trouble, as far as amongst their top four players, they're going to struggle. And if you have a big man, as we saw with Taco, you don't have to be 7'6", but they don't have. This is an undersized Duke team.
The three-point shooting was the flashing red light before the tournament for them. They are 340th in the nation, as C mentioned. They're dead last of every team that made the tournament. If they win the championship, they will be the worst three-point shooting team to ever win a championship. And because of the lack of depth, Cam Reddish has not had a good freshman year. But he's still a guy you have to respect from the three-point line. He went to the bench in foul trouble. And once that happened, all of a sudden, you saw UCF say, we're going to guard RJ, we're going to guard Zion, and we're going to lay off everyone else. Mm-hmm. And that will be the strategy moving forward, particularly if one of those three guys has to go to the bench. Duke got very fortunate early. Zion got a foul when he knocked the kid into the scorer's table. About 2 minutes later, Zion could have picked up his second foul. There was a no call. He was able to play the entire game. But they're going to dare Trey Jones to shoot. They're going to dare really anyone other than Cam Reddish to shoot and RJ Barrett to shoot the basketball. Zion was 3 of 7 yesterday, but I think UCF was fine with those shots. Duke needed one of their best three-point shooting nights of the year to escape with a one-point win. I still think they're the best team, but this is the blueprint. Sag off, guys, pack the paint, especially if you have the personnel, and try to play a physical style that could get Duke in foul
trouble.
Even if
you don't have a 7'6" guy.
Right, because nobody else does.
All right, so Duke wipes the brow. They are moving on. Time now for Put a Grade On It, sponsored by CarMax. Zion had another strong performance, as we just mentioned, in the second round, scoring 32 points, grabbing 11 rebounds, and living up to the hyped match with Taco Fall. Nick, put a grade on Zion's day.
I mean, you have to give him an A. 32-11-4, and Taco had been saying, and I understood, I'm not going to let him dunk on me. Well, they met at the rim. It wasn't a dunk, but they met on the rim in the deciding play, and Zion won that matchup. He was the best player on Duke yesterday. I give Zion an A.
You have to give him an A, and I like the fact of how he's attacking the tournament. He's shooting a lot of threes, a lot more than he did during regular season. You mentioned before, 3 of 7 from three. That enables them to open up the court more, and that's what he's going to have to keep working on. So I'm glad that he's not afraid to shoot the basketball from deep. So I give him an A also, Nick.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, an all-time great walks away from the NFL. That's next on FS1, and you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back.
If you are looking to add some excitement to the tournament games, make BetDSI your tournament betting partner. BetDSI has been paying winners for 20 years and is top-rated on betting review sites. BetDSI has a very user-friendly interface, mobile site, and has the fastest payouts in the industry. Simply play, win, get paid. BetDSI offers betting options for everything. Bet on March Madness, NBA, NHL, and all other major sports, politics, reality TV, virtually everything. Try live betting at BetDSI, where you can bet on games from start to finish, every play and every minute until the end. New members get 100% bonus match using promo code FTF. Once again, Go to betdsi.com and use promo code FTF and get this limited time 100% bonus offer to make some extra cash betting the madness this March. Get one free $1 million contest entry just for signing up with promo code FTF. It's only a game until you bet it at BetDSI.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. It is a beautiful Monday morning here in New York City. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. Big show on the program today. Big news with Rob Gronkowski walking away. You got LeBron already moving on to next season. But what a weekend in the NCAA tournament to discuss. Let's start with one of the best games this weekend. Duke, the Blue Devils, barely moving on after a tight one with number 9 seed UCF. Less than 20 seconds to go. Duke down 3. Zion gets the layup to fall and the foul. That to tie it. Misses it. But how about R.J. Barrett there for the putback? Duke now up 1. Time winding down. UCF gets one last chance for the win. Can't get that or that to fall. Almost did. So close. Couldn't be closer. 13 lead changes in this game, including 3 in the final minute of play. Boy, Duke barely escapes. They win 77-76. They are on to the Sweet 16. Here is Zion Williamson talking about the final possession.
Go out there and play like defense and play like you got to play like there's no tomorrow. And, you know, Trey played great defense and got him to shoot like a off-balance shot. And, you know, Dawkins came flying in. I mean, when he tipped it, you talk about microseconds. And when that ball rolled around the rim, it looked like it was going in. But, you know, as Coach K talks about a lot with the basketball gods, they had our back tonight.
He did say that. Coach K said luck was on our side. I mean, I thought Duke was going to lose this game. They got very, very lucky at the end. See, what was your reaction to Duke's win?
Yeah, but you need that. In the NCAA tournament, you look at past champions, typically there is a game where they are tested, or typically a game that they shouldn't necessarily win or they don't play their best. That has been one of the consistent things in watching the NCAA, and that's what Duke will be trying to. They will have the ability, because it's a lot easier to correct your mistakes from a win compared to, man, the suddenness of it, man. And these tournaments are so emotional. So for the kids of Duke, they know they are very, very fortunate to be able to get through this game against a very good UCF team coached by Johnny Dawkins. Man, he had his team ready. Now, he is a disciple of Coach K, and you can see he ran some half-court sets that gave Duke problems. He also knew about the personnel of Duke, and I believe was able to exploit the lack of height and the lack of perimeter shooting that Duke has struggled with throughout the season. So great job by Johnny Dawkins and the UCF and what they did yesterday, coming up just a little bit short. Ball halfway in, halfway out, rolls off the rim with the chance for UCF to come up with the biggest upset in the tournament.
And the kid who was tipping it in, Aubrey Dawkins, obviously Johnny's son, a kid who grew up in the area when Johnny was an assistant at Duke. Johnny, I believe, was Coach K's first All-American. So there's a lot of history there. And Aubrey played the best game of his life, and he came up just this short. So many things had to fall in the final 2 minutes exactly Duke's way for them to win. When UCF had the ball up 4 and they had the alley-oop to Aubrey Dawkins, and it just goes through his hands.
A shot he probably makes.
Oh, I mean, listen,
9 out of 10 times.
That wasn't. I understand that during the post-game discussion, Barkley and some others took issue with it. No, it's not. There's too much time to run off clock there. There's 2 minutes left. You have a layup. And he wasn't trying to showboat or anything. That was the most high percentage play. He just didn't come down with it. But go a minute later. Zion misses a 3 on what could have been the last possession. They get the offensive rebound. That then leads to the and one. On that, if Taco Fall, who played, I thought, really well, fouls him, as you said before the show, see, hard enough, then he's, first of all,
you can't allow Zion to get to the bucket at that point in the game and get the ball above his head. If you're going to foul him, you have to be able to be more tactical and hold his arms down.
Particularly because you're up 3. Because, I mean, it's a killer in that spot. But even there, he misses the free throw. Zion was, I thought, brilliant in this game. But he misses the free throw. But Taco had fouled out there.
There was no one in the lane.
R.J. Barrett goes down and gets the offensive rebound. All 3 of those things have to go Duke's way. And then UCF has one good shot attempt and one perfect tip attempt. They did a great job with the camera work showing that Aubrey, before the ball was even released, was tracking for the tip in, looping around, pushed a teammate out of the way, and got exactly where he wanted to go. Duke is the better team than UCF, but they didn't play a better game than UCF yesterday. They just got fortunate. But to C's point, Villanova last year was the outlier. The team that rolls through everyone en route to a championship. Almost every champion other than them has a game where, oh, it could have gone the other way. We'll see if Duke continues that trend by winning this tournament.
Was this just an oops game for Duke? Or, C, as you touched on, did UCF sort of lay out the blueprint on how to beat the Duke Blue Devils?
Right. Coming to the tournament, you don't think Duke's going to struggle in the first round. But I think that it, with them being the favorite in the tournament, teams that are in their bracket or know about them and watching college basketball, you know there's several things Duke has struggled with this year, even though they've had an amazing season. Their lack of perimeter shooting, one of the worst in college basketball. There's like 350 teams in college basketball. They're in the bottom percentile as far as, I mean, in the 330, Nick?
340th out of 353 the teams in college basketball.
I mean, you could be blindfolded and do better than what they're doing. So they don't have great perimeter shooting. They don't have a lot of depth.
No.
They don't have much height. So if anyone gets into foul trouble, as far as amongst their top four players, they're going to struggle. And if you have a big man, as we saw with Taco, you don't have to be 7'6", but they don't have. This is an undersized Duke team.
The three-point shooting was the flashing red light before the tournament for them. They are 340th in the nation, as C mentioned. They're dead last of every team that made the tournament. If they win the championship, they will be the worst three-point shooting team to ever win a championship. And because of the lack of depth, Cam Reddish has not had a good freshman year, but he's still a guy you have to respect from the three-point line. He went to the bench in foul trouble. And once that happened, all of a sudden, you saw UCF say, we're going to guard RJ, we're going to guard Zion, and we're going to lay off everyone else. Mm-hmm. And that will be the strategy moving forward, particularly if one of those three guys has to go to the bench. Duke got very fortunate early. Zion got a foul when he knocked the kid into the scorer's table. About 2 minutes later, Zion could have picked up his second foul. There was a no call. He was able to play the entire game. But they're going to dare Trey Jones to shoot. They're going to dare really anyone other than Cam Reddish to shoot and RJ Barrett to shoot the basketball. Zion was 3 of 7 yesterday, but I think UCF was fine with those shots. Duke needed one of their best three-point shooting nights of the year to escape with a one-point win. I still think they're the best team, but this is the blueprint. Sag off, guys. Pack the paint, especially if you have the personnel, and try to play a physical style that could get Duke in foul trouble.
Even if you don't have a 7'6" guy.
Right, because nobody else does.
All right, so Duke wipes the brow. They are moving on. Time now for Put a Grade on It, sponsored by CarMax. Zion had another strong performance, as we just mentioned, in the second round, scoring 32 points, grabbing 11 rebounds, and living up to the hyped match with Taco Fall. Nick, put a grade on Zion's day.
I mean, you have to give him an A. 32-11-4, and Taco had been saying, and I understood, I'm not going to let him dunk on me. Well, they met at the rim. It wasn't a dunk, but they met on the rim in the deciding play, and Zion won that matchup. He was the best player on Duke yesterday. I give Zion an A.
You have to give him an A, and I like the fact of how he's attacking the tournament. He's shooting a lot of threes, a lot more than he did during regular season. You mentioned before 3 of 7 from three. That enables them to open up the court more, and that's what he's going to have to keep working on. So I'm glad that he's not afraid to shoot the basketball from deep. So I give him an A also, Nick.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, an all-time great walks away from the NFL. That's next on FS1, and you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back. On Sunday, NASCAR heads to Texas Motor Speedway, where Kyle Busch looks to continue his hot start. It's all Sunday at 3 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Time for us to go viral. On Friday night, James Harden dropped in a cool, casual 61 points against the Spurs. It was his third career game with 60. Only Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, and Wilt Chamberlain have more 60-point games. However, that wasn't enough for Harden. Check out this video he posted on Instagram, working out after said 60-point game.
And if people didn't see the game, they needed every single last bucket. They were trailing late. He hit three consecutive threes to turn, I think, a four-point deficit into a five-point lead, and then this afterwards.
Yeah, this is unbelievable. This is why James Harden was never into his body. James Harden was in the streets. James Harden ate anything, drank anything. But to have him now, working out now after the games, man, he has done a complete 180. Jenna, I thought you would love this. Nick sent me the video late on Friday night. This is amazing. You're talking about one of the best basketball players ever actually falling in love more with the game and realizing that weight training, nutrition, that's what's helped him get better besides his ability to shoot a variety of shots and dribble the basketball.
And if you saw his interview after the game but before the workout, he was asked by the NBA TV crew, what keeps you motivated? And he said very straightforward, I have a chance to be one of the greatest players to ever play this game. And if that's not motivation enough, I don't know what it is. And that's not hyperbole anymore. He might win his second MVP in as many years this year. He has been spectacular. I think Friday night, see, was his sixth game of 57 or more. 50 this season.
So impressive, I know.
He's been unbelievable.
Next time you could include me on that group text.
It was a DM on Twitter, Jenna.
Appreciate it.
You're not, I don't know how to get to your Instagram.
Stories to start your morning, sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. So Duke squeaked by UCF yesterday, 77-76. Zion led the way for Duke, scoring 32, grabbing 11 rebounds. See, what was your biggest takeaway from this game?
Man, I didn't like Zion missing that free throw at the end. That free throw had no. That was a choke job right there. His collar was a little tight, barely could breathe. It's only 15 feet.
So that ball, he missed it coming ball, off his hand.
That ball went like 13 feet. That had no chance of going in. But their ability to be able to survive. That's what a lot of national championships teams have been able to do. They have a game that scares them. They're able to learn from those mistakes, and I think the young Duke players will do that.
The missed free throw notwithstanding, I thought Zion was spectacular, and it was really cool to see him and Taco meet at the rim with the game on the line. But for Duke, UCF showed a bit of a blueprint now. Let them shoot. They are the worst three-point shooting team in the tournament. And even if Zion gets 30, they are beatable. So when they get ready to play Virginia Tech, they're going to have some wrinkles ready for him, or just hope Trey Jones can hit some type of shot.
All right, moving on. The Lakers were officially eliminated from the playoffs on Friday, which makes the over-under on when they will seemingly part ways with Luke Walton the day after the season ends.
It's a good over-under, Jenna.
According to reports, I'll take the under. Okay. Is that now how they
sure.
work?
No problem.
Jason Kidd would be a serious candidate for the job, according to reports. Nick, would this be a good move?
No, they're better off with LeBron as player coach than Jason Kidd as the head coach.
Absolutely. Those are two bad ideas, so go ahead.
Okay, fair enough. Listen, I have been as critical of Luke Walton as anybody. I don't know that he's worse than Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd's name, along with Mark Jackson and Ty Lue, have been the three names connected to the Lakers throughout the season. I think Ty would be an excellent choice. I think Mark Jackson would be a fine choice. Jason Kidd, in my opinion, would be an awful choice. I really cannot recommend the Lakers strongly enough to go a different way.
Yeah, I'm sure the Lakers aren't going to call Nick, but I believe that they did Jason Kidd a favor here by putting him in the loop, getting his name out there in circulation. I don't believe he's going to get an NBA job right now. I believe he's going to go back and coach college basketball, go back to his alma mater as far as Cal, take that job to resurrect his basketball coaching career.
All right, to the NFL now.
The Lakers aren't going to call you.
Cardinals are rumored to be taking Kyler Murray with the first overall pick in the draft. When head coach Cliff Kingsbury was asked about drafting a quarterback at one, he said, everything is on the table. So you think the Cardinals draft Kyler Murray at this point?
From all the word on the street, it seems like they're going to draft him. That's the only reason why all these draft boards would have him going there, with the relationship with Kingsbury. But they got so many needs, I wouldn't draft him. I mean, this is not a team that's a quarterback away from potentially being in the playoffs. No, because even if they draft Kyler, man, I know he measured at 5'10". If he gets hit the way that Josh Rosen was getting hit with that bad offensive line,
he's 5'8"?
5'8", 5'6", by November.
I wouldn't draft Kyler, and I wouldn't draft Nicky Bosa or Josh Allen. I would trade the pick. I would try to keep talking.
You wouldn't draft him first. You would potentially draft him later
on. Oh, yeah, I've got no problem with drafting if you trade back to 4 or 6, whatever, if you can get one of those players there. My point is I would also trade the pick. Now, what do I think they will do? I think they will draft Kyler, and I think they'll trade Rosen. But I think they need to try to get a bounty for that number one overall pick, especially since they traded picks away to get Rosen last year. This team's got Patrick Peterson, Chandler Jones, David Johnson, Larry Fitzgerald, and a bunch of question marks. You are not a star pass rusher or a quarterback away, and Rosen might be better than Kyler, so I would trade the pick.
All right, finally, the Steelers general manager continued to stick up for his quarterback, saying all the talk around Big Ben is, quote, white noise, and we feel comfortable knowing Ben is our quarterback and our leader. See, what do you make of Kevin Colbert's comments?
That's what I expect. That's the way they've done for a long time in Pittsburgh. I mean, when Hines Ward left there, there was a story about him and Ben Roethlisberger not being on the same page. Coaches have left there. Now we got a couple other wide receivers that have left there. This is not new. That's what I expect him to be able to say. I expect the Pouncey, the center, to say, oh, yeah, this is Ben. He's our leader. Of course, they just gave him a contract extension. That's how you do business. You don't tell people the actual truth of, like, what's going on and everything. He's revealed himself. He said it. He got Ben Roethlisberger and 52 kids. They're getting ready to sign Ben to a contract extension after a couple years ago. Ben talked about, man, I don't know how long I want to play football. But this is the way that Ben is their leader. All right? They respect him, what he's done on the field, and they, like the New York Football Giants, organization run by families, have done things the right way. How their quarterback is going to be sent off, it's important to them. That's why you see those comments from Colbert, and you shouldn't expect anything else. You shouldn't be shocked because this is how he feels and the organization feels about Ben Roethlisberger.
Question for you, C. Do you think behind the scenes, privately, between Colbert and Roethlisberger, there is anything Colbert has said or will say to Big Ben about this year, about going about his business, leading the team, if you will, differently, or Colbert isn't in position
well,
to say
that? Well, I don't think that they give Ben talking points as far as how he's going to lead the team. Like, that would be a change, man. A general manager, typically when you're a player, he don't know how to lead a team. I mean, I wish a general manager would come down and try to give me some pointers. Well, where'd he get those from? Where'd he get his leadership skills? Where'd he get his qualifications? I ain't going to pick the players, and you ain't going to lead the team.
Right.
That's part of the reason why I'm here and reason why I'm the captain.
So, listen, this is what the Steelers, everything they've done this offseason, they've been telling a consistent story. Now, it might be a story that I think is a little misguided, but the story has been consistent. Ben Roethlisberger is the only irreplaceable Pittsburgh Steeler. Ben Roethlisberger is the guy that even at an advanced age going into year 15, we are moving forward with from now until further notice. Ben Roethlisberger, they said, is going to get a contract extension, and Colbert also mentioned, might be his last, you know, real contract in the NFL, so we're going to take care of him. Like, this Pittsburgh Steelers have a quarterback who they've won 2 Super Bowls with. They've been to 3. He's been the biggest reason they got to the two most recent of them. The first one was a different type of team, Bettis' final year. And Ben's going to have to do it now this year with the least amount of help that he's had in the Mike Tomlin era. He's going to have to do it without a certified star receiver. Juju's been good, and maybe he will turn into a star, but we don't know yet if Juju is a legitimate number one receiver, and we don't know if James Conner, what he is over a full 16-game schedule after last year he had to play a full 16-game schedule. But Big Ben seemingly has gotten what he wanted here. I'm not saying he didn't want more talent on his team, but the team has supported him as much as you can support any player publicly within an organization, even though some of Ben's comments to me were not worthy of the support.
Outside of the coaching changes that Ben might not have been happy with or been happy with in the past, Ben has nothing to do with the players not being there, though. All right, so we can't act as if Ben didn't want talented players there. Ben's always wanted talented players. All right, so I can understand Ben deserves a certain amount of blame, but it's not, Ben's desire was not to be playing with Le'Veon Bell. It was not Ben's desire that AB wasn't going to be there. Like, Ben is smart enough to know that having talented players around him, so that's just the way that things worked out. L. Bell, they couldn't keep him. AB forced his way out of the organization.
Well, I think his challenge now is twofold. One, yes, he's going to have to do it with less talent, but two, in a division that's going to be far more challenging than it was for the Steelers with at least with Antonio Brown last year.
Oh, 100%. Like, we don't know what the Bengals will be, but the Ravens were a playoff team last year. The Browns were alive for the playoffs with 2 weeks left and should be better. And while I don't give Ben any culpability whatsoever for Le'Veon Bell not being on the team anymore, I feel he could have done a better job with Antonio. Now, maybe there were other things that could have brought Antonio back into the fold, more money, Antonio kind of being reeled in earlier. But Big Ben, in my eyes, exacerbated the Antonio Brown situation.
When he didn't show up to practice, that wasn't Ben's fault.
Well, no. It was Antonio's fault for no showing, no calling the team, 100%.
But and behind the scenes, Antonio was trying to get a new contract.
Absolutely.
They were going to give Ben a contract. So Antonio was trying to break his way out of Pittsburgh. Ben just happened to be the quarterback and everything. Now, he don't like that Ben was going to get an extension, and he wasn't going to get an extension. So that's why Antonio, if you look at it, I told you guys a long time ago, Antonio wants a new contract. The only way he can get a new contract is by forcing his way out of Pittsburgh.
And I understand that, and I agree with you. The point I'm making is whether he would have departed from the team this offseason over a contract dispute is one thing. Him no-showing the practice after getting into an argument with Big Ben and throwing the football at him, to me, that had been bubbling up. We heard it from Antonio's comments about he threw me under the bus on the radio interview. Now, maybe Antonio's gone no matter what, and Big Ben, I think, would obviously rather have good players than bad players. The point I'm making is the leader of the team, is the quarterback of the team, he could have diagnosed earlier on, man, Antonio and I are getting sideways. Maybe don't throw him under the bus on my weekly radio spot. Now, maybe Antonio's gone either way.
Yeah, also Tomlin could have done that. Antonio could have done that himself, too.
The Antonio no showing, no calling is no one's fault but his own. That was totally on him. But I think that relationship going sour was multiple parties involved.
All right, let's switch gears, talk some basketball. Lakers, now less Lakers. They were officially eliminated from playoff contention Friday night in a loss to the Nets. Caps a tough stretch for them. Sixth straight year they've missed the playoffs. First time LeBron has done so since 2005. LeBron posted the following message on the gram over the weekend. Believe me, I promise Laker Nation this spell won't last much longer. I swear the marathon continues. See, what do you want to see change for this team in order to...
Man, I wish he would have swore last year. Goodness gracious. You can't be making a promise in year number two. That ain't like you, LeBron. Like, what the heck is going on here? Oh, I swear. You swear by what? Like,
I think people, if when he signed with the Lakers, he'd have put that out there. I swear we're going to be in the playoffs next year. People would be like, what? That's all you're promising?
Yeah.
It was a given they would be in the playoffs.
It lets you know how bad things are.
Yes.
In La La Land.
And we feel like we just heard. Don't worry. I'm going to switch. LeBron, playoff LeBron is coming right now.
Well, Jenna,
it's next year.
The Los Angeles Lakers. In their existence. How long they've been playing basketball there, Nick?
In Los Angeles, since the 40s, starting in Minneapolis.
So 70 years or so?
Yeah.
In the first 65 years or so, how many times they missed the playoff?
Five.
In the first 65 years, they missed the playoff five times. How many years in a row they've been out of playoffs,
Nick? This will be six.
And they just brought the King, supposed to be the greatest basketball player ever. Mm-hmm. Now, if they would have brought Jordan there, we would be talking about very, very different. But, I mean, it's go time. I mean, the fans, this is not what they're used to.
And I'm sorry to interrupt you, but from the fans' perspective, we talked about it when he signed, that LeBron's curb to getting acceptance from those fans was going to be bigger in L.A. than any other city because of the Kobe stuff and because of the history. This now made that curb half a mountain. Like, LeBron went so far backwards in the views and in the opinion of so many Laker fans. You know when you could see it? When he passed Jordan on the scoring list. And there was a golf clap, and the game was stopped momentarily, and then it's like, let's just keep it moving, because if people were already skeptical of LeBron and the Lakers this season,
certainly did not help.
Everything that's happened this season, the injury, the miss in the playoffs, people blaming LeBron for the trade rumors, and Laker fans, I've learned, are oddly very protective of Luke Walton. Like, they blame him a lot for Luke Walton potentially being fired this offseason.
Well, it just hadn't been a great year. Since he signed with the Lakers, the things that they wanted to do, the personnel changes, it was the lost year. And it's also the year that we saw the kryptonite hit Superman. And that's the reason why they're not in the playoffs. They could come back with the same team. I know people have been like, the same exact roster. Oh, I know they got holes in that roster. I know there's some things, a question mark. But they come back with that same roster, and they would be third, fourth, or the fifth seed in the West. And the West is going to continue to get better. We don't know if Kawhi is going to go to the Clippers. Like, they're going to continue to get players. KD might be leaving Golden State, but they'll still be the favorite. He might. But the Western Conference, with the current Lakers roster, they would be third to fifth. So I wouldn't be concerned about that. The concern with LeBron is, Are they going to be able to win a championship, put a championship team around him? And right now, it's highly unlikely, more so than probable, after year one.
When Chris says they could bring back the exact same team and be in that mid-tier of the playoff teams, right now the 4-8 seed in the West are separated by a game and a half. 43-45 wins is 4-8, right? And so if LeBron's healthy and Ingram and Lonzo, if those three players are healthy all year, the Lakers have 10-12 more wins, and they are right there where you're talking about. But that does not a championship team make. So to make the playoffs, what does he have to do to keep his promise? Don't get hurt, right? Like, don't get hurt, and they'll make that. But the standard cannot be. We can't move the goalposts in the other direction where it's, hey, it's a successful year if LeBron and the Lakers just make it to the playoffs. Maybe they can upset someone in the first round. That is not where I am at. I think most people
it
are at.
It could have been at this season. But it certainly wouldn't be that way for year two. But we...
Yes.
I guess my next question would be, do you trust Magic and Poinga to go ahead and fill in the team? Forget getting a big free agent, but to do the thing they seemingly had a hard time with do this year. They needed more shooters. They didn't get more shooters. Do you trust these two can put it together for the inevitable championship?
I just think where basketball is right now, basketball has changed so much. You can't win without no shooter. Unless you got 3 7-footers or something. Like, you're getting ready to do some analytics that we haven't seen. You're getting ready to overwhelm us with in the paint points. No, man, you need shooters to be able to play this game. And right now, they would have to change their philosophy. I listened to Magic's interviews as far as the offseason, the summer.
It's wild,
what he
right?
thought about, what he thought, his basketball philosophy. Man, you can't win with that unless you had the Warriors. If you had the Warriors and you told them to not shoot threes, that's the only way. You have to have overwhelming personnel. But will they develop some type of depth? What type of shooters will they put around? And with them screwing up this year, did they mess up the AD trade? Are the Pelicans so upset right now that they will trade him to a worse deal than trading him to the Lakers? That is on the board, because I don't believe the Pelicans want to do business with the Lakers. So, to me, I'm concerned about LeBron's ability to be able to win, because Lakers fans next year, you know what's going to happen? They're going to make the playoffs. If they don't make the NBA Finals, it's going to be a bad year.
Especially,
we're going to be halfway through his contract now.
Mm-hmm.
This thing's happening quick.
Especially if Kevin Durant leaves and you don't have – like, Kevin Durant leaving ostensibly is great for the Lakers. But then there are not many excuses about not making the NBA Finals, assuming they upgrade the team. But what C mentioned about Magic in the interviews, there is a great compilation going around the internet right now that we watched last week of Magic and Jerry West – juxtaposed, talking about the same basketball ideas with totally different answers about how you build a team, about what works in the NBA, how you talk about yourself. And you have one executive in Los Angeles and Jerry West that seems to have it all exactly right, even though he's what? Nearly 30 years older than Magic. He has continued to change with the times, 20 years older than Magic. And then one guy in Magic that seems to be, it almost feels like a Saturday Night Live parody of what a GM would be saying, which is, look at the NBA playoffs. Shooting teams don't win titles. What? Like, and on. So do I have faith in Magic? Not really. Do I think the Lakers will still get a major free agent? Yes, probably despite him. Will that be enough? You
That's
need KD
question.
To leave. You need the young players to improve. It's a lot of ifs. You need to figure out who the coach is going to be.
Right.
A lot of possibles.
Jenna, but like
ifs.
Normal, Nick won't give me credit. I did warn him.
Won't give you credit for what?
I did warn you.
About what?
About the Lakers and who was picking the personnel.
Oh,
get your expectations up too high.
Right, but I didn't.
No, but did I warn you?
You warned me.
Oh, there we go. That's it. Stop. That zip is
Carter. Coming up, Gronk calls it quits
after
your
Chris,
decade
you
of
warn
dominance.
Me. Pretty That's simple, Dusty. It's not that complicated.
A lack of credit.
He's trying
Chris
to make sure
Carter.
He's off that. No, I didn't think he was going to be real good either.
That's unbelievable.
I was the first person to speak it into your ear.
Back here, First Things First, former All-Pro running back Brian Westbrook joins the show.
Sir. Thank you.
Brian, you got like 1/8 of the James Harden coming.
You got a lot going on right now.
Yeah. How far are we going down? I'm just curious.
I think it may have another weekend. Starting to itch a little bit in my face.
The prize of all your
facial. Need to.
Looks good.
Clean shave, like CeCe.
I like it.
Keep it going. It looks good.
Yours is actually real hair. We got a lot of smoke.
I was waiting for that.
Smoke my beard anymore. I'm off it. You shamed me out of it.
Right now.
Do it. Do it. Wipe my face.
Brian, after much speculation to the surprise of not many people, Rob Gronkowski is calling it a career. Just 2 months after winning the Super Bowl, Gronk told his fans on social media he is forever grateful to them and to the organization drafted him in his 9 years with the Patriots. Gronk made 5 Pro Bowls. He caught 79 touchdowns, and he basically transcended the position of tight end. Brian, could you put Gronk's career in some perspective for us as a former player?
Well, you're talking about dominant. You're talking about one of the greatest players at his position of all time. Gronk is that guy. But when I talk about greatest ever, and Gronk certainly is in that conversation, there's three things, three categories I bring up. Dominance. Mm-hmm. I think of rings and longevity. How long did he do it? And so we talk about dominance. He revolutionized the position. He put the position in a place where you put small guys on the field, we'll beat you up in the run game, and I'm too big. I'll catch the ball over you with my catch radius and my size. When you put big guys in, I'll run past you. I'll still catch the ball over you. And, of course, he had the run game, the run block. And so we know he was dominant throughout his time. Rings, 3 rings. So you can't argue there. They've been in multiple championships, I think 5 championship games. 3 rings. And longevity, that's the only one thing that if you're talking about the best ever, Tony G, Antonio Gates, John Mackey, some would say, he's fallen just a little bit short. But over the course of his career, the 9 years that he played, compared to anyone else's 9 years throughout the course of their career, he's right up there with the best of them.
Right. When you don't have the long career, though, you can't be in the same category because this is a physical game. And the people that can endure that physicality, they should be rewarded for that. So 100%. when you have guys that play 15, 16 years, like the numbers will speak for themselves. But you, if you took his best years and you put them in with the other best years, yes.
Yeah.
But, man, he took a beat. And this is a physical game. And at the end, Gronk had a great career. But the game won. He can't play to that level any longer. That's the reason why, you know, his career is being cut short. But tremendous football player. I just think his blocking ability will always be underrated. I remember the game in I think it was Indianapolis, where there was a lot of jawing going back and forth, and they ran a goal line play. And Gronkowski blocked the guy out the end zone. Then after the game, he said, I had to throw the guy out the club.
Out the club.
And spicy interview like that, you're not going to see from a Patriot. No. He brought that to it, but he'll never get that type of credit. And because of his personality and everything, people don't understand. You can be a very, very smart football player and be silly. You can not, maybe not express yourself eloquently like other players, but be a brilliant football player. And you can't play all those positions unless you are hell of a smart. And I know New England's system, as complicated as any offensive system, and the way he can go up and down that lineup, Brian, and play in all those different positions, like, that speaks to his overall football IQ.
And as great as Tony Gonzalez was, and Tony Gonzalez played literally twice as many games than Gronk did, Gonzalez was not even a very good blocker.
No.
You know what I mean? Gonzalez was a wide receiver playing tight end and had numbers accordingly. Gronk did everything well. And the career that I think Gronk compares to the best is a guy who actually didn't play tight end. And it's Calvin Johnson. Another guy who played only 9 years. Calvin obviously didn't have the team success you're talking about. But if you look at those numbers, around the same games, Calvin has him clipped considerably in yards, and Gronk's got him beat in touchdowns. And when you consider that Calvin, how dominant he was at the receiver position, and it, obviously part of that job is not blocking the way it is tight end, when his touchdown numbers are greater than Calvin's, when his yards are 75, 80% of Calvin Johnson's, and you add what he did in the run game, when he didn't touch the ball, the way he could impact the game. And I understand Calvin Johnson could impact the game by being tight, double-teamed, and skewing coverages. But those are two guys that come to mind that both played under a decade in this league, put up monster, like their best year is as good as anyone's best year at the position, but just didn't. The reason they won't be included in the who's the greatest wide receiver, who's the greatest tight end, is because they needed to do it 7 years longer, 6 years longer, and they played 9 seasons.
Yeah, his career was short, cut short because of injury. We know that. And I think the one of the things I appreciated about Gronk was the yards after the catch. He made guys, he punished guys. Yeah. He made defenders cower in the back end of defenses. He was able to do that. And another fact that you talk about, the greatest ever, you have to say, what did he do in crunch time?
Yes.
What did he do when we needed you the most? AFC Championship game, big catches. First downs, Super Bowl, big catches, making big plays. He was always there for Tom Brady. Red zone threat all over the field. you know, he's certainly in that conversation.
So that's what I was going to bring up. How much better did he make Tom Brady? How much easier did he make the game for Tom Brady, knowing that wide receivers came and they went throughout the course of Tom Brady's career? Gronk has been, for the most part, that mainstay for him.
Yeah, football is the ultimate team game, and you need great teammates to have a great career.
If I was a quarterback and I'm throwing the CC, because he can catch the ball all over the place, he can make me look good. Gronk had the ability, and Tom Brady's great. No, don't get us wrong. But Gronk made Tom Brady a better quarterback because of his catch radius, his ability to go up and over receivers, same way that CC did, same way that the greats do. They make the players around them better. Gronk had that same type
of ability. And that's one thing I would say about Gronk. If I could have all the tight ends, and as far as forget their career, I'm just throwing, I need to throw one pass. He's going to be one of the ones because he has wide receiver type hands. He makes very difficult catches in traffic. I mean, the difficulty on some of those catches going down the seam, the most dangerous passes in the football are if you play outside or when you have to come inside and you can't avoid people. And the most dangerous passes from a tight end standpoint are when you are running down the seam and you have to look over your shoulder and you know that you're getting ready to get hit. And Gronk used to thrive in those situations. Even the catch he made in the Super Bowl that got the ball inside the 5-yard line. That's like a Willie Mays catch. Like, those catches are so difficult. Gronk did them on a regular basis. So for me, his overall catch radius, blocking ability, versatility in the offense, that's what makes him become one of the greatest that's ever played the game.
Oh, I'll be missed. Brian, stick around.
Absolutely.
Take a break coming up. Why is Odell feeling dangerous? Next on First Things First. Back here with Brian Westbrook, Odell Beckham seems to be enjoying his new life as a Brown after his former life as Big Blue. He channeled his inner Baker Mayfield over the weekend, saying, "I ain't gonna lie, I woke up feeling dangerous." And no to Baker when he said the same thing midway through last season. Brian, what are your expectations for the Baker-Odell duo?
You know, I'm one of these guys that have felt for a long time, but probably every year, forever, that more talent is way better than less talent. There are some people that say, you know, there's not enough balls to go around. I've never believed that. All the teams that I've played on that have had more talent, we've won, obviously, more games. Mm-hmm. When you add Odell Beckham Jr. To a team that has talent, Landry, Njoku, Nick Chubb, and, of course, a quarterback in Baker Mayfield, that's a difference maker. That's probably the best offense, talent-wise, in the league. Now, here's the thing. I think when you add Odell to Baker Mayfield, it's a different team. This is a different standpoint than Odell Beckham Jr. has ever come from. He's never felt that same type of love from Eli. He's never felt that same type of excitement, arm strength from Eli. It's a different world for him. He's going out there to play with one of his best friends, Jarvis Landry, in an offense that's stacked. Freddie Kitchens will find a way to get him the ball, get everyone involved, and Baker Mayfield as a quarterback will continue to get the ball around to everyone. That's why this offense will be successful.
One of the things when you bring in someone like Odell, you have to try to make him familiar with what's going on. You want to make him comfortable. So I like the fact that he's quoting Baker, saying, "I'm feeling dangerous." Now, this offseason, man, they got some work to do. Ain't no Super Bowl trophies won in the offseason. We have seen it year after year. Oh, man, this team won free agency. Then what happened? They win 6 games. They win 8 games. They make a push. They win 9 games. They barely get in the playoffs. They had chaos in the locker room. So what they do this offseason, man, we drafted Randy Moss. We were already talented. But, man, we tried to get as many players in the state of Florida to work out so we could all vibe together, so we can let him know what the culture is, what's the standard, what do we expect, but also so we can know who he was. Because watching him on TV and who he was when he showed up, they're different people. So the fact that what you mentioned is it's critical. Sometimes the quarterback is such a different guy. No matter how much we like him, he's going to be different than us. He ain't going to fit in with the rest of us. Baker is not that way.
Yep.
He fits in with the skill set. Go back and watch the videos, him in Oklahoma, him out there dancing and everything with his teammates and everything, singing rap songs. They have the same blood type. Odell and Eli are not hanging out together.
They have opposite blood types.
I mean, it is not the same. So when you can have that overall chemistry, it's a younger generation. He's got Baker. He's got his best friend, Jarvis Landry. He's got his wide receiver coach from the Giants, from LSU being there to be able to coach him. And Freddie Kitchen, he understands, I got to be able to get this ball out. So I think Odell's in a better spot than he's ever been throughout his career.
And that's where you mentioned he and Baker are the same blood type and he and Jarvis are best friends. But that's where the point you've been making about how much overwhelming youth is on this roster helps them as well. There's not a generation gap between any of their star players and their other star players. They're all 26 or younger. And so they all are likely to have similar interests, being a similar position. It's not one guy got to go home to my wife and three kids, worry about private schools, and another guy saying, let's go out to the club. The other element for Odell that is exciting is this is the first time, college or pro, he has been playing with a quarterback who is above league average. At LSU, he never had no great quarterback. And Eli Manning was his whole time there was never one of the top 10 NFL quarterbacks. That's not about his history and his accomplishments. He's now playing with a quarterback that is better than most of the other quarterbacks. That is, at the very least, above average, and that whose skill sets match up. Where was Baker extraordinary the last half of last year? Deep passes. That's something Odell has been dying for. The deepest touchdown pass thrown by the Giants last year was thrown by Odell Beckham Jr. Where's another place Odell is, to me, in my eyes, the best in the league? That quick slant and go. And he is has an ability. Baker was as accurate as any quarterback in the league on that specific route, that according to Warren Sharp. So, like, the skill sets mirror up and the personalities mirror up.
The reason why he should feel dangerous is, and Brian, you know how important this is, this is the best offensive line he's played with, mm-hmm. too. Now, he played with an outstanding running back, in Barkley, 10 to 12 games. But the productivity of what they can do with Chubb, 8 games in Kareem Hunt, out of the backfield, I believe they're going to be able to replace some of that productivity. Jarvis Landry is the best wide receiver that he's played with. The tight end is the fastest tight end that he's played with. So he's playing with the best situation overall. Forget about just, oh man, I'm familiar with the wide receiver coach. He knows exactly what I want to do. Not only does the quarterback have a fastball that leads to some of the better things that I do on the field, everything matches up for him to be the most productive year of his career.
And you have to add to that the division. What's going on in that division? Pittsburgh lose Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell. They're trying to figure out what's going on with Big Ben. Mm.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.